Vayeshev. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayeshev, but also for the first of two Shabbat Chanukah. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Kaf Gimel Kislev, Hetafshin Ayin, the 23rd day of Kislev 5770. 23 means in two more days is 25. 25 is Chanukah, but we count from the night before, which means tomorrow night, Friday night, Leil Shabbat, is also the first night of Chanukah. We'll talk a lot about candle lighting and about Chanukah, and hopefully we'll have a chance to tie it in with the Sedra of Vayeshev and next week's Miketz. In the meantime, let us say Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Ya Adonai Miya Amod Ki Imcha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam ובין ביבשה המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Chanukah, also known as the Festival of Lights, this year runs from Shabbat to Shabbat, which mean the candles go from Friday through Friday, usually at night. In the case of Friday, it has to be earlier, because we cannot encroach on Shabbat to perform the mitzvah of lighting Chanukah candles. We'll get the details of that in a moment. I neglected to say, not that it's the most important thing, but at least gives you a way of focusing, it is Thursday, December 10th. Before I get into Chanukah and into Vayeshev, let me mention that last evening in Yerushalayim, there was a major, major protest against the government's announcement of a building freeze. Many thousands of people attended, and it was described in the paper as a peaceful, in the papers, as a peaceful demonstration, a peaceful rally, which is nice. And it just made me want to go on record. Not that you asked, but this is Israel National Radio, and it's also OU Radio, and I am not speaking for either. I am speaking only for myself. When I say that where in a typical situation of a government being elected on a certain platform with a prime minister making promises, and then there comes a time where those promises go out the window. I would love once to have the experience of hearing a prime minister get up and say, I am sorry, but I will keep my promise. Maybe he shouldn't even apologize for it. I will keep my promise that I made to my voters, to the people who brought me into office, and I will not change a policy that I expressed then, not for the United States pressure, and not from pressure from the left, and not from the so-called Palestinian Authority. This is what I believe, and this is what should be. Israel is not the occupier. There are Arabs who occupy parts of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was given by God to the Jewish people in perpetuity, forever and forever. Sometimes we're here, sometimes we were exiled. It still was ours. We came back. We got exiled again. It's still ours. Doesn't matter where Jews live in this world. They all should be living in Israel, but it doesn't matter how many Jews live in Israel. It doesn't matter how many Jews live in a specific area of Israel or a specific city. This land, in its entirety, belongs to the Jewish people. It does not belong to Arabs, no matter what they call themselves. Non-Jews are welcome to live in the land of Israel, and always have been, provided they respect the law, and provided they are maintain good relations with the existing government and the whole structure. You cannot be a terrorist and make a claim to living here. It doesn't work like that. You can be a non-Jew, whether it's Muslim or Christian or anything, and say, I would like to live in Israel, and you are expected to follow decent rules. Remember again that in 1967, the Six-Day War, which was a war fought by Israel in defense of its existence, resulted in the return into Jewish hands, into Israel hands, of parts of Eretz Yisrael, which we lost, which were taken away from us in 48 and in past, and it came back to us. This has to be the way we look at it. This should be the way the world looks at it. There wasn't a nation of Palestinians that we conquered and took away their land. There was Jordan holding on to territory that should not have been theirs in the first place, which had whatever population on it it had. There was Sinai being held by Egypt. There was the Golan held by Syria. And all of that came into Israel's hands in 67, back where it belongs. If anybody thinks otherwise, let them think otherwise. We, the Jewish people, should be thinking just what it teaches us in the Torah, just what Rashi comments on that very, very first verse, Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Why is the Torah telling us all of these stories if the Torah is a book of mitzvot and a way of life for the Jewish people? It should have started with the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelochem. Comes Rashi, quoting a Rabbi Yitzchak, who says, to show the world, and us of course, that God created the world, that he gave this land to whom he chose, that he took it away from them and gave it to us, and he gave it to us in perpetuity. This land is ours. We should not be freezing building. We should be energetically building and building all over Eretz Yisrael, all over the land of Israel, to accommodate more and more Jews who want to live here. The most Arabs within our borders should get, the most, provided we have certain promises and guarantees, the most they should get is municipal autonomy. No army, no nationhood, no statehood. This is the wrong place for it. Autonomy, meaning if there is a city whose inhabitants are Muslim Arabs or Christian Arabs, and they want to run those towns and cities by themselves, then they should have, I believe, autonomy if they agree to certain rules. But statehood should be out of the question. It doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks and says. It certainly doesn't matter what the Arab world says, because their main goal is the destruction of Israel. And if our main goal is the preservation of the state of Israel and the survival of the Jewish people, and even more, the flourishing of Israel and the Jewish people, then we have to have our priorities straight and see what building means and what a freeze on building means and what it says to the rest of the world. I think I'll stop there for this moment. Unfortunately, the ongoing debate and difference of opinion and difference of approach between segments of the Jewish population is nothing new. In fact, the Hanukkah story has an understory which is not emphasized for good reasons. That very much is the story of groups of Jews having different approaches and fighting with each other and arguing with each other and making us vulnerable to attack from our enemies. It's a lesson we haven't learned. What I'm talking about now, let's sort of put it into the Hanukkah story. We're talking about a Syrian Greek government in Israel as a conquered area, administered by Syrian Greeks, with a goal of Hellenizing the population, making them more sympathetic towards the Greek Empire, and hopefully less rebellious. But it got to a point where, in order to bring that about, the Greeks passed very oppressive legislation banning Torah study and Torah teaching, banning the observance of ritual circumcision, banning the keeping of Shabbat, banning the setup of a Jewish calendar, and many, many other restrictions. And there was an internal debate among the Jewish people, which had more than two sides to it. Some said, maybe it's time that we modernize, Hellenize, be like everybody else, and therefore they'll leave us alone. And others say, no, we must tenaciously maintain our Torah way of life, even in the threat of danger to our lives. Among those were those who said, let's go into hiding, go into the basements, go into the caves, and do the best we can to maintain Jewish life without angering the Greek-Syrian government. There are others that said, we have to confront them, and we have to fight if necessary, and die if necessary, in order to bring about a raise in the quality of Jewish life and restore it to the way it should be. The fight against the Yevanim and the Mityavnim, assimilated Jews who took on Greek culture to the expense of Torah culture. Nothing wrong when there is no conflict. What's wrong is when it replaces Torah and Torah values. And a relatively small band of rebels revolted and fought against the oppressive Greek rule and had a miraculous victory. They then set the task of cleaning up and purifying the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, which had fallen into not just disrepair, but defilement over years. And even though the goal was to restore all temple service, the symbol of the restoration of temple service was the lighting of the menorah, for several reasons. It's the most visible of activities in the Beit HaMikdash. Its light shines beyond the confines of the temple itself. And, maybe most importantly, light is meant to dispel the darkness, which is what the Greek Empire was equated to. There's a medrash in the very opening psukim of the Torah, which describes tohu vavohu vechoshech al pnei tahom. Choshech there means the Greek Empire. Various words in that verse are meant to reflect other empires under whose thumb we were. And choshech, darkness, is the Greek Empire, and therefore the symbol of victory over the Greeks is light. Hence, our sages fixed not only the 8-day holiday of Hanukkah for singing of Hallel and telling stories and praising God, but also the mitzvah of lighting the Hanukkah lamps to commemorate the lighting of the menorah, which represented the dispelling of the darkness of Greece. I decided to share some of the tracks of Dudu Fisher, who has a wonderful series for children called Bigan Shel Dudu in Dudu's Kindergarten. This is the music from the Hanukkah album. And sometimes a child song tells more of a story than an adult song does. On the other hand, we will start with the traditional Hanero Talalu, and then we'll talk more.
Hanero Talalu, anu madlikim. Hanero Talalu, anu madlikim. Ala nisim, ve'ala niflaot, ve'ala teshuot, ve'al hamilchamot. She'asita la'avoteinu, she'asita la'avoteinu, bayamim ahem, bayamim ahem, bayamim ahem, bazman hazeh.
Let me explain that in English, but let me also give a little introduction to it. I don't know how basic I have to be. I'm assuming a lot of the listeners know how to light Hanukkah candles. The procedure is, and let's talk specifically for tomorrow night, Friday night, you cannot light at nighttime. You have to take a look on a calendar and see when Shabbat candles are to be lit, and about 5 or 10 minutes before that, you light Hanukkah candles. One single candle for the first night. That candle has to be bigger, fatter, larger than usual. If you use oil, there has to be more oil than usual so that it will last into the dark, into the night, even though you're lighting early, officially a half hour after the stars come out, preferably even more than that. These are more details which I won't go into. But that's the basic idea. The lighting is preceded by blessings. Three blessings on the first night. One is the blessing of the mitzvah, lahadlik ner Chanukah, or lahadlik ner shel Chanukah, to light the lamp or the light of Chanukah. And then that is followed immediately by another blessing, which concludes she'asa nisim la'avoteinu, for he who made miracles for our ancestors, by yamim ha'heim bezman hazeh, in those days at this time, referring to the Hanukkah week. Then on the first night, we add Shehechiyanu v'kiyumanu v'hegiyanu l'zman hazeh, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has given us life, sustained us, and brought us to this time. It's an expression of joy that we once again are celebrating Chanukah. Now the song that you just heard from Began Shel Dudu was the beginning of Hanerot Hallelu. After lighting the candle, when you do your first look at them and contemplating what's involved, we have the following passage to recite or to sing. We light these lights because of the miracles and wonders, deliverances and victories you, God, performed for our ancestors in those days, at this time, at the hand, in this case of Hanukkah, of your holy Kohanim. The Hashmonaim, the Hasmoneans, were Kohanim, and therefore the acknowledgement is not just thank God for the miracles and the deliverance and the victory, but that it was done al yedei Kohanecha HaKadoshim. Al yedei Kohanecha HaKadoshim. The passage continues beyond where the song went. V'chol shmonat yimei Chanukah hanerot halalu kodeshim. All 8 days of Chanukah, these lights are holy. V'ein lanu reshut lehishtamesh bohem. We have no permission to use them for light, for warmth, for kindling something else, to make any other use of them, except to look at them. Ela lirotam bilvad. By this, we say, kidei lehodot ulahalel lishimcha hagadol, that we may give thanks and praise to your great name, al nisecha v'al nifleosecha v'al yeshuotecha, yeshuatecha, for your miracles, your wonders, and your deliverances. So in that passage, before you get to the Ma'oz Tzur song, which we'll talk about later, I hope, we have the Hanerot Hallelu, which states clearly that we are thanking God for the partnership that he has with us, and in this particular story of Hanukkah, the active partners were the Hashmonaim, who fought the military battles in revolt against Greeks, and with God's help, they succeeded, and we emerged from darkness to light. Very important concept, and therefore an important passage to, as I say, read or sing. Hold that thought. We'll be right back after station identification, or whatever else is done between the two halves of Torah Tidbits Audio. Perhaps something, perhaps nothing. Stay tuned.
Lechana elishabeach Tikon bektefilati Vesham toda nezabeach Le'et achim matbeach Mitzaram nabeach Azegmo beshir mizmor Mizbeach Azegno Beshir Mizmo Chanukat Mizbeach.
That was the first stanza of the traditional melody of the traditional song of Hanukkah called Ma'oz Tzur, Refuge, Rock of My Salvation. To you it is a delight to give praise. Restore my house of prayer so that I may offer you thanksgiving. When you silence the loud-mouthed foe, then will I complete with song and psalm the altar's dedication. Oz egmor b'shir mizmor chanukat hamizbeach. Chanukah means, among other things, dedication. The Hanukkah itself is the rededication of the Second Temple, but it reflects upon and joins the first dedication of the Mishkan, the dedication of the Temple by Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, the dedication of the Second Temple in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, and Im Yirtzeh Hashem, soon, in our time, the dedication of the third and everlasting Beit HaMikdash, Sheyibaneh, may it be built. So, Hanukkah plugs in to Jewish history, to the flow of Jewish history. I want to make one more point about what I was talking about before, and then we'll continue on other related topics. This last thought, by the way, is a very troublesome thought among certain segments of the Jewish population, where some people feel if you thank God for things like this, then you're underplaying the role that humans played. I remember after the Six-Day War, the slogan, Kol HaKavod Tzahal, all the honor to the Israel Defense Force, and they certainly deserved much honor and much kudos and our appreciation, but so did God. And I believe that God is always the senior partner in the relationship that we have with Him. And therefore, we have to thank God as well as IDF. There are those people who only thank God. And that's missing the point also. The point is we take our instructions from God, from His Torah, from Halakha, and if we implement it properly, then we are active partners with Him in bringing about our victories and our deliverances, and that's the story of Jewish life. So you have to be careful here, not just to say thank you to God, and not just to say thank you to the human beings involved, but thank you for the partnership that brought about all of the miracles which we celebrate. And when I say miracles, you'll see later I'm talking about open miracles as well as inconspicuous miracles that are disguised as nature, that are disguised as superior military planning, that are disguised in any which way to discredit God. He deserves a major portion of the credit. We, human beings, deserve a serious portion of the credit, with perhaps the only exception when we came out of Israel, where God said to Moshe, tell the people, I will fight for them in Egypt, va'atem tacharishun, and you just stand by and watch what happens. But usually it's not like that. Usually it's an active participation on the part of both partners, with God doing His share, and we hopefully doing our share. I said earlier in the show that I wanted to make a connection between Chanukah and the Torah portion which we read this week. So let me do that now. I don't know how much more we'll get to Parshat HaShavua. I want to spend more time on Chanukah. But here's the background. Even though there is no official correlation between the calendar and the particular weekly portion, proof of which is when Pesach comes around, we don't have a relevant weekly portion to read. So the procedure is suspend the weekly schedule and read a special reading from elsewhere in the Torah for Passover, for Pesach. So too for Shavuot, so too for Rosh Hashanah and for Yom Kippur. Whenever a holiday would need a Torah portion, which they all do, they have to find it elsewhere, not from the regular weekly portion. When it comes to Chanukah and Purim, which are post-biblical holidays of rabbinic origin, the weekly Torah reading is not replaced, preempted. It is supplemented. So this Shabbat, we take out two Torahs. In the first Torah, we read Parshat Vayeshev, seven people. And then we open up the second Torah and read for the Maftir a portion relative to the original Chanukat HaMizbeach, the dedication of the Mishkan, of the Mizbeach and the Mishkan in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is the special reading for Chanukah. However, if one wants to go one step further and not say, well, there's Parshat HaShavua, has nothing to do with Chanukah, and there's the Maftir for Chanukah, and that's for Chanukah, you go one step further and you look into the reading, because the readings are always the same for Chanukah. The most common weekly portion which we read on Chanukah is Miketz. The other possibility is Vayeshev. And in years like this, when Chanukah runs Shabbat to Shabbat, and there are two Shabbatot Chanukah, we read both Vayeshev and Miketz. No other weekly Sedra is a Chanukah Shabbat reading except for Vayeshev and Miketz. So you reflect on the theme of Vayeshev and Miketz, and then you see if there are parallels to be drawn, lessons to be learned, or whatever. The theme, the main theme, is the tension and friction and enmity from Yosef's brothers to Yosef, and it continues throughout Vayeshev, and the troubles that came in its wake, and it continues into Miketz, even when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, which does not happen until Vayigash. The Torah and the rest of Tanakh tell us many, many times of enemies from outside the Jewish nation. Most recently it was Lavan, and there's Esav, and there are the descendants of Esav, including Amalek, and a whole variety of enemies which we fought throughout our early history. The worst enemy has been ourselves. When there is a split among the Jewish people, the results are never good. It starts with Vayeshev. Yosef tells his brothers of dreams that he had, dreams which portray him as a leader, with them bowing to him. They don't like that. They hate him for it. He is favored by Yaakov, which was a natural thing as the firstborn of Rachel, his beloved, whom he should have married in the first place without the Lavan switcheroo. And he gives him a special garment, a kutonet pasim, a multicolored striped garment. And the brothers hate him more. That hatred leads to a plot to kill him. Reuven, the eldest of the brothers, scotches the killing plan of Yosef and intends to save him and says, let's throw him in to a pit instead. Rashi makes the famous statement, there was no water in the pit, but it had scorpions and snakes. Not a very nice thing to do to your brother, no matter what dreams he had and no matter what fancy coat he gets from your father. Be that as it may, Yehuda also attempts sort of to save him by taking him out from the pit and selling him to a passing caravan. Yosef ends up in Egypt, and we do too later. So things did not work out well because of the friction, the tension, and the hatred among brothers. As I mentioned earlier, this is unfortunately and sadly, lamentably, a theme that permeates Jewish history. This specific battle, so to speak, between Yosef and his brothers manifests itself later in the split of the kingdom into the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah, and in each generation it shows up in its own ways, just like we say that in each generation we have a Haman type who tries to destroy us, or an Amalek type, or whatever. And that's not really two different things, because Haman is a descendant of Amalek. In every generation, we have our internal fighting, which sometimes leads to devastating results. That, in a different way, describes the Chanukah story as well. If we had had unity among the Jewish people, Greece wouldn't be able to touch us, Rome wouldn't be able to touch us, and we would live happily ever after. The internal fighting, the assimilationists versus the Torah traditional, and the way things were done, created a situation which weakened the nation so that we were able to be put under the thumb of foreign rule. And the victory of the Hashmonaim is seen as not only a victory over the Greek oppressors, but of the traditional Torah values over the Hellenization and the assimilation that was attempted on the part of many of the Jews. It was an internal split among the Jewish people that makes us vulnerable to enemies from the outside. We have to learn this lesson. Unfortunately, it's a case of easier said than done. But it has to be religious and secular. It has to be Ashkenazi and Sephardi. It has to be Hasidic and Misnagdish. It has to be Olim and native borns, Orthodox and conservative and reform, whatever. We have plenty of things that split the people, which is not per se bad if that which unifies us is recognized as universally more significant than that which divides us. Unfortunately, it doesn't. Not yet. When all Jews will realize that first and foremost we are all Jews, and then we could work on our differences and on tolerance and on getting along with each other, but first and foremost we are all Jews, then we're getting someplace. Chanukah, ironically, even though I said it was a victory of the Torah point of view compared with the secular assimilationist, let's be like everybody else point of view, today you find, and for many years, many, many non-religious people celebrating Chanukah. They might not be as meticulous with the lighting of the candles as someone who knows the halacha, but it's a national celebration. And it's not just in Israel, it's all over the world like that. Jews take a certain pride in the Chanukah story, often without realizing that it was a victory of Torah values over non-Torah values. So there's an irony in there, but it's something that's a point to enlarge upon, a spark to grow with. Let's have a track from Began Shel Dudu, and not one of the traditional songs, one of his, Harbe Or Doche Chashecha. This carries out the theme that Yovan, Greece, represented darkness, and the lighting of the menorah symbolically was the lighting of light which pushes aside the darkness. Dudu Fisher, Began Shel Dudu.
איך אפשר לגבור על חושך? איך אפשר עליו לגבור? אם נרות רבים תדליקו, אם תפיצו את האור. הרבה אור דוחה חשיכה, הרבה טוב דוחה את הרע, הרבה עצב דוחה השמחה, אז תנו לה להתפרץ. הרבה אור דוחה חשיכה, הרבה טוב דוחה את הרע, הרבה עצב דוחה השמחה, אז תנו לה להתפרץ. איך אפשר לגבור על רוע? איך אפשר עליו לגבור? אם מעשים טובים נפיץ, אם זה לזה נעזור. הרבה אור דוחה חשיכה, הרבה טוב דוחה את הרע, הרבה עצב דוחה השמחה, אז תנו לה להתפרץ. הרבה אור דוחה חשיכה, הרבה טוב דוחה את הרע, הרבה עצב דוחה שמחה, אז תנו לה להתפרץ.
So much to say, so little time to say it in. Let me mention something about Purim and Chanukah. I mentioned Purim before. We're talking about Chanukah, of course. Even the Ma'oz Tzur has a stanza that deals with Purim. And there's an important relationship or connection between the two, more in their contrast than in their similarities. Both are the two post-biblical holidays of olden times. We could add today others like Yom HaTzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, but let's not pull those into the picture yet. Purim and Chanukah for a very long time represented many, many different Purims and many, many different Chanukahs. And they remained where all the others faded to represent not just themselves, but all the Purims that have happened in this Jewish history, and all of the Chanukahs. What do I mean? A Purim is a salvation, a deliverance from a threat to the physical existence of the people of Israel. Haman, angered by Mordechai's refusal to bow to him, when he found out that Mordechai was a Jew, when the other people in the courtyard of the king taunted Haman about Mordechai's not bowing, he despised the idea of striking out at Mordechai alone, and rather desired to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai. That hatred, that desire to destroy the Jewish people, is not dependent upon how observant or how non-observant an individual is. You can't go to a Haman, just like you couldn't go to a Hitler, and say, I don't keep Shabbos anyway. I don't keep kosher. I don't pray to God. I don't do this. I don't do that. Don't kill me. The desire of that type of enemy is to destroy every man, woman, and child of the Jewish nation. When we are saved from that kind of threat, it's a Purim. The Purim, we were saved from the threat of Haman. But there are many other Purims. Look it up in the Encyclopedia Judaica. Google it, as they say. And you will find reference to many other Purims of different Jewish communities, which at one point were actually celebrated as holidays. Today, less so, except for the Purim, which represents them all. Chanukah represents a threat to the Jewish religion, which is tantamount to a threat to the Jewish people, and it's a good thing that we perceive it that way, even if others don't. So you could go to an Antiochus and say, I accept upon myself the Hellenistic way of life. I reject Torah Judaism. Don't kill me. And he said, of course we wouldn't kill you. We welcome you with open arms. It was the tenacious individuals who not only refused to Hellenize, but they were the ones who went into secret and hiding in order to observe mitzvot of the Torah, in order to teach Torah. The threat was not a physical annihilation. The threat was a spiritual annihilation. And thank God we perceive that as one and the same. In the Chanukah case, it became a threat of physical annihilation, but that was after all of the attempts at, so to speak, forced conversion were done. And this is not unique to Chanukah. It has happened throughout Jewish history. And whenever we prevail against those kinds of enemies, it's a Chanukah. And the Chanukah represents them all. Let's go back to the practical reminders. Friday afternoon, 5 or 10 minutes before candle lighting time for Shabbos, one should light the Chanukiah. One candle for the first night. The Shamus, the helper candle, is also lit, usually, and displayed in the Chanukiah, but not on the level of the 8 candles, on its own level, up above, below, to the right, to the left, whatever. Not going to get into all the details about where to display the Chanukiah, indoors at a windowsill, facing the public street, outdoors in a protective glass box, at the entrance to your home. That's the original. That's what many people do in Yerushalayim. But let's not get into that in detail. Then Shabbos candles, and this must be before Shabbat begins. Anyone, even non-observant people, who get home late on Friday and do not have an opportunity to light Hanukkah candles and Shabbos candles before dark, before sunset, should not do it. And doing it, I believe, is a slap in the face of Jewish tradition. Because nowhere does it suggest that we are supposed to observe the Hanukkah lighting at the expense of Shabbat. Shabbat is supreme in that respect. I don't have time to go into more of that now. All I could do is wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Hanukkah Sameach, and a Mirat Hashem. Next week's show will be Thursday during Hanukkah with a couple of days still to go. It will be Rosh Chodesh as well. We bench Rosh Chodesh this week. Rosh Chodesh Tevet will be Thursday and Friday. All the rest we'll try to squeeze in next week. Lehishtameach.